Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today I am joined by not one, but two wonderful people, a husband and wife duo that also happen to be very good friends of mine. So together they are on a mission to help us all live healthier, happier and stronger lives. Their shared passion for physical fitness underpins everything that they do, and it's what led them to starting their business together. In 2019, they opened The Strength House, a personal training gym in the heart of London. And today, I'm going to be talking to them about the benefits of strength training, the myths surrounding strength, the importance of strength for runners, and why increasing your strength could save you a lot of time, money, and pain by preventing injury. Welcome to the podcast, Tara Gadry and Greg Cornfoyt.
Hello.
Hello, thank you very much.
Excited to be here.
I'm so happy to have you both here. I feel like, to be honest, I usually come to you. So I come to the Strength House, I come into your world. But today, you're both in my world. You're in Soho, in the studio.
It's exciting.
It is, yeah. No, it's. I'm loving this room. I'm loving like the acoustics in this room. It is perfect for me.
Impressed with the mics.
Absolutely.
Well, Tara, we've known each other for how long? I was trying to figure this out yesterday. I think 8 years.
Yeah, it must be.
Eight years. I think we were introduced initially by our mutual friend Natasha. Shout out to Natasha. And as a result, Greg, you've somehow now ended up being stuck with me as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that process goes.
Well, I think that's probably where I'm going to start off, because I should say I have been training with Greg, been training with him one-to-one at the Strength House for a while now, and I have learned so much. Greg, you are like a fitness scientist. I feel like your approach to the human body is like a complex math solution, and you're always just trying to, yeah, like answer these questions, and I really appreciate and geek out on all the knowledge. So I love the sessions for that. And also, this is a bit embarrassing to admit, but here we go. I always feel so good about myself when I leave our sessions, and I will tell you why. Not because of the physical benefits, but because you praise me. You praise me, Greg, for my effort. Okay. And you know, as an adult in life, you don't ever get a gold star, or you don't get a well done or a sticker. When I do my sessions with you, I feel like you give me so much praise for my hard work that I come out, and I've given myself the title of Greg's top student, top of the class.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, it's something that I've always been quite passionate about, is seeing people move incredibly well, you know. So if I see that, then I think that's a really good idea to kind of, yeah, say well done, or you're doing it right, you know.
Yeah, which is such a small thing, but I honestly, I don't think many people get that in their day. So I'm just here for the ego. The ego feels great. So thank you for that. But enough about me. Let's get into it all. Greg, in one of our first sessions, you said something to me that was very interesting, got me thinking about our approach to fitness and to exercise. And it was something along the lines of, exercise for fitness is not the same as training for sport. So can you explain to us what we were talking about and what you meant by that?
Yes, absolutely. So the way that we like to look at things is two different ends of the spectrum. So we have sport and activities on one side, and then the other side, which is the other end of the spectrum, we have exercise. So exercise should be, or we certainly want it to make us healthy and be able to let us do all the things that we love to do, which is the activities and all the sport, without causing injury, essentially. So yeah, I guess kind of think about it in two different ways, which makes it easier when we're looking at exercise and the things that we do, and those things are going to make us stronger for doing the activities and the sports.
Yeah, because I think often if we're just focused on the sport, the outcome, for example, I don't know, maybe how accurate our racket swing might be, or how strong or how heavy we can lift if we're competing, or how fast we can run, then of course that is the outcome. But it's very different, isn't it, to doing exercises, like for example, that you want to do week in, week out, maybe for months, to actually just take care of your body, and so that your body feels good and strong as a result, as opposed to feeling annihilated, smashed, exhausted. And sometimes I think at this time of year, a lot of people are trying new things. And often that is the feeling, isn't it? It's like, just go in, work hard, come out and be like, well done, you're limping out the door.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, when we do all the activities and we do all the sports that we love, you know, we might be left feeling like, wow, I'm like really battered, but you know what? I absolutely love doing that and I don't want to stop doing that. So how can we feel less tired and battered, beaten up from doing the things that we love by making the body stronger with very specific exercise that is designed for our body, that's designed for the mechanics of our body, how it works, how it moves. And the more specific we can be with that, then the stronger we're going to get for those activities that we love doing.
Mm. And Tara, because between you, obviously, you have so much experience and knowledge. And, you know, injury prevention is, I know, something that you really focus on, something that you're both brilliant at and something people now come to you for. So why is it that if people have tried other things, maybe they've tried physiotherapy, osteopaths, maybe they've just accepted, actually, I always have this pain in my hip or I always have this pain in my back. That's just my body and they just kind of power through. Why is it actually such a game changer for so many people when it comes to injuries when they come and train with you?
I think it's because, well, this kind of touches on a bit of our journey and why we started Strength House. I went through a injury where I had gone down the traditional routes of trying to find a resolve for it. So gone to the doctors, seen physios, tried treatments, massage, acupuncture for my knee. Yeah. Shockwave, all these different things. And not only was I kind of misdiagnosed, I was given exercises which actually hindered it more than helped it. And this is just my personal experience. This isn't talking about everyone in general. So then it came for me, where do I go from here? And I was already a personal trainer, trying to exercise the best way I knew and with good form and technique and everything like that. And we thought, okay, there's something missing here because the exercise that's meant to be making me feel better, it's not. And that led us down the route of exercise mechanics. And we found that there's this kind of missing spot between personal training and physiotherapy in a way. So we're kind of in the middle of two industries at the moment. And, you know, in terms of exercise mechanics, it's a really big topic. And I feel like it should be something that both physios and personal trainers learn across the board, but currently the industry's just not there yet.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting that you said that because I was speaking to Oliver Patrick last month and he's a wonderful guy. I really enjoyed the episode with him. He works in the health well-being, you know, he's been in the industry for years as well, and he kind of describes this, you know, it's very fragmented, isn't it? So you might have, in the one hand, if you think about the medical profession, it's, you know, all these different sections. You go to the hospital or the doctor and you might have one person that's looking at your skin and one person that might be looking at your blood test and one person that might be looking at your x-ray. And like you said, they're all separate. So you go to one side of the hospital and then you might go to another side and they don't really work that well together. And then he highlighted to me that actually the fitness or the well-being industry is exactly the same. You might go to one person who says, okay, let's work on your running form. And then you might see someone else for your sleep because your sleep's not great. Or you might speak to a nutritionist who's going to help you with nutrition for your running. And all these things, again, are separate. So I'm wondering actually, yeah, how we can kind of, I guess, bring these things together and what those intersections are. But I also think with the work that you both do, which I've been just fascinated, as I say, I'm always learning from both of you, is that actually I think some people have accepted, okay, for example, I've got this hip thing, I can't run, Adrian. I'd love to be a runner. I'd love to, I can't run. You know, this many years ago, this happened and I've never been able to run without pain. I can't run anymore. Or someone might say something else, you know, upper body, shoulders, whatever it is. So do you think that given what you said about, you know, the kind of in-between of fitness and personal training, strength and physiotherapy, is there hope for maybe a lot of people out there who have different injuries that stop them actually doing a sport and they've kind of written it off and thought, I'll never be able to do that again?
Yeah, definitely. It will come down to each individual person and their history with their injury, of course. But, you know, if they've gone down the route of seeing doctors, consultants, physios and something isn't working for them, there is another way of looking at it as well with what we do. And this is why we've got consultants and surgeons and physios that refer some clients to us, because they know that we're able to take clients beyond that step. And ultimately, it comes down to client care and what's going to get them stronger and back to doing the things that they love. Mm. So there is hope, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is a different approach, isn't it? So maybe you could tell us, before I dive into my strength, I think myth busting maybe, which I think, because I knew I was going to do this episode with you, and even the fact that the gym is called the Strength House, and even when I use the word strength, I know that the things that come into people's minds, which might not necessarily be right. So we're going to dive into all of that. But I guess before we do, maybe it would be really helpful to have a bit of an outline of what that approach of body mechanics that you talked about, what that is. Who wants to take this one?
I can absolutely take this one. Okay, so what is exercise mechanics? Essentially, it's like a branch of biomechanics. And then if we have a look at what that is, it's how forces impact our bodies. So every day when we get up off the floor, get up off the seat, walking along, we have all of these forces impacting the body all the time. And it's the same when we exercise. So what exercise mechanics is that understanding of what's happening in that very specific exercise that we're doing. Say we're doing a lunge or we're doing a push-up, whatever it is, it's understanding at each joint what force is going through that joint, what muscles are involved, and also having that understanding on the joints that are moving, which ones kind of should we be keeping still and which ones should be moving? You know, how does the exercise look? Because we can have 10 people lined up and they're all doing push-ups and they're all going to be doing them slightly different because everyone's got different limb lengths and different spine shapes and all this kind of thing. So essentially it's that, yeah, that understanding to make something completely bespoke to someone when you're training them.
Some of those things that you mentioned, like getting off the couch or maybe carrying a heavy bag, or you know, the mechanics of how we do our things in our everyday life, we might not even think of those things as being related to the hour that we spend or the 30 minutes that we spend working out.
Yes, exactly. So what we can do in the gym is essentially raise that person's tolerance for everyday life. You know, if that involves running with their kids, you know, on a Saturday and Sunday around the park, if it means, you know, picking your toddler up off the floor without having back problems or hip problems, we look at all those very specific things that are incredibly important to that person. So, you know, the goal can be whatever it is, whether it be running a marathon, you know, competing in tennis, or, yeah, literally trying to pick your kid up off the floor. So depending on what that goal is, we look to get those specific muscles stronger so they get to do those things without hopefully feeling that pain or that fear of doing it.
Yeah, and pain, that word, or discomfort, it's interesting, isn't it, how so many people just live with pain all the time. You know, yeah. I put myself in that bracket when I first spoke to you, Tara, last year about my shoulder, and I said, oh yeah, you know, it hurts when I do this and it hurts when I do that. And you were like, well, you're just going to leave that. Do you know what I mean? Like if my child was telling me every day, my shoulder hurts, my knee hurt or something, I'd be wanting to look at it. But I was just like, oh, you know, we all have aches and pains. And I just accepted, it's been so long, to be honest, it'd been years. I just accepted it. I was like, well, just hurts sometimes. But I think so many people actually probably live like that. And there's certain things they know will fire, you know, when people say, oh, this aggravates my back or this flares it up. And they kind of just live with pain. And I think it's really, really fascinating to, now that I've worked with you, to realize how good you feel when you are pain-free, not just when you're exercising, but just in general. You don't realize how much more energy you have or how debilitating it can be if you're sitting at a desk, for example, with back pain every single day. I'm sure many listeners are probably thinking, yeah, actually, I do that. And living pain-free is a game changer.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely.
There's something that you said the other day, actually, that I really resonated with. And it was to do with all the things that you do in life, let's say activity, sport, for example, they kind of make you who you are. So if you take them away and then, you know, because of pain or you can't do them anymore, then you feel like you've almost lost a part of you and you can't really be yourself. Your confidence is down. You know, you've got these aches and pains. You can't do the things that you love. You know, it has an effect on your mental health. It's just this whole thing, you know. So if we can manage to fix that, you know, and take that away and make someone feel better, then you can really have a profound impact on that individual.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's dive into some of these misconceptions, as I said, because even just the title of the episode, you know, strength training, people will have an idea in their mind. They might be picturing a really you know, heavy barbell or something like that. So I'm going to read out four statements, some questions, some statements, and then I want to go through each of them with you and you can tell us fact, fiction, truth, myth. Let's get into it. So these are the four statements that I've heard many times when it comes to strength training. First up is strength training boosts your metabolism. Sounds great. Is it true? If so, why? Number two is strength training will make you increase your body mass and look buff. We've all heard that. Number three, strength training causes inflammation, and so women should be careful about when they strength train and should only strength train at certain times in their cycle. And lastly, strength training for both men and women increases testosterone. So let's get into it. Number one, Tara, I'm going to come to you. Strength training boosts your metabolism. True, false, fact, fiction?
Okay, so that's a really nuanced topic because similar to yourself, you know, and I'm sure other people have read about it, like eat this spice to boost your metabolism or eat a certain food or do a certain thing. And really what it comes down to is it's so individual to what each person is doing. So say usually metabolism is linked with someone with fat loss goals. That's why they might be looking into these articles or seeing what it can do to help them. And when it comes to a fat loss goal, the main thing that you should be concentrating on is strength training to increase your muscle mass. That's going to help you maintain your results longer term and your joint health and everything that's good for you. And also your nutrition will have a big part in it because for fat loss, you've got to create a calorie deficit. Without calorie deficit, you're going to find it hard to lose weight or achieve your fat loss goal. Now, depending on what that person is doing, your needs are going to change all the time through that process. So especially if you're slowly cutting down calories throughout the process, your overall, you know, very generally, like generically speaking, sometimes your movement might start to become less. So because your energy is going to be less at that time. And so your calorie needs will adapt to that. It will adapt to what your body needs during that time. For someone that's highly active, strength training all the time, on top of day-to-day activity levels, they're high, their needs are going to be different from someone who's maybe only training a few times a week. So I think the main thing to look at is how consistently you're strength training. Build it into your life longer term, if you can, to improve your muscle mass. And then also have a look at your energy needs day to day and what you need to feel good and also fuel your training at the same time.
Yikes, you see, it's always so complex. You just want to hear yes or no, because then people can be like, okay, cool, boost your metabolism, good, tick, because that's what a lot of these things are, aren't they? You know, we see kind of sensationalized headlines within fitness and well-being, especially, let's be honest, in January, everything you pick up is saying, this boosts your metabolism, this makes you, I don't know, sleep better. It's all about, you know, a binary approach. So yeah. Thank you for explaining it so well.
So I think that's the thing that we discuss all the time at work with exercise and nutrition is, there's no like tick box solution. It's not protocol, you know. It's always going to come down to the individual and what their goals are at the same time.
Yeah. Okay, number two, Greg, over to you. So this one, strength training will make you increase body mass and make you look buff. Now, I should probably say, again, I am not advocating for or against or anything. I am simply reading these statements because I already know that people are going to say, oh my gosh, you know, what's wrong with looking buff? What's wrong with looking strong? I love to encourage that. I'm just saying, because I know someone out there is going to come for me. I'm just reading out the statements. So yeah, is it going to make us buff if that is our desired effect or not?
Yeah, so I think that's what it kind of comes down to. It's the goal of the individual. You know, if we're going to try and look buff, so what does that mean for a start?
Like you Greg.
Like
Greg's buff.
So if we're looking to, you know, if we want to look a certain way, then we need to place stimulus on our body to help that process along the way.
What about women? I am going to focus on women here who say, oh, I don't want to do strength training because I don't want to look buff. And so their fear is that we might list all these benefits and say strength training is good for joint health, strength training is good for your posture, strength training is the best. But they've been told for so long through whether it's media or, you know, incorrect information that as soon as they step into a weight set area, they're going to just be like, I don't know, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That would be amazing if that actually happened.
Yeah.
So I think, to build muscle, and it is a huge misconception, it takes years and years to build muscle mass. So I think, if you are someone that is looking to go to the gym and start strength training and you have that fear, that's not something that is going to happen super quickly or even ever, because it's also to do with your calorie intake, something that Tara touched on as well. So I think it's, if we're looking to feel better, feel strong, then strength training is going to be something really good to start.
And genetics, right? Because genetically, let's be honest, I mean, I have not done a lot of strength training before working with you. And I mentioned this to you off mic, actually. I received an Instagram very, very long DM. It was a few years ago, but still remember it, from a guy who very kindly decided to write me this long message telling me why I should stop exercising and how I exercise too much because I look like a man. That was his words. Yikes, ouch, thank you so much. And so on the one hand, like I said, people have their own body goals, people can choose to look however they want to look, and as I said, I celebrate and champion let's all look and feel however we want to look and feel. But it's no wonder that when you've got people out there who say these kind of things, that people maybe don't feel as comfortable or as confident. But bringing it back to my word there, genetics, I'm someone who I think genetically I look like I lift weights when I don't. What's going on there?
So, I think you've just said it already. It's, we are what we are when we look at genetics. When we're born, we have a certain genetic makeup. And, you can have one person that looks like they train all the time, which, you do a lot of training. And then you can have, someone else that, sport might not come kind of naturally for them. It's always a little bit harder because they don't have that, that genetic makeup. Mm. And that's absolutely fine. And that is actually the majority of the population, So I think if you're thinking you're one of those people, it's about understanding how you can start slowly and something that works for you, and see how you progress with that. And I think it's something that you're definitely going to love.
Yeah,
and it's also, I think, want to say to people that are looking to build muscle mass or are training and it's taking a little while for them to get to where they want to be, is not to get discouraged, because everyone's start point's different. There might have been people that, Greg's been going to the gym since he was young, right? He's been training since
birth, I think.
Yeah,
since he looks like that.
So yeah, he's been training since his teens, throughout his 20s, now 30s. And there's some people that have never trained before and starting maybe in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever that might be. So just never compare your journey to someone else's.
Yeah, that's definitely a great message. Okay, and number three, strength training causes inflammation. And so women should only strength train at certain phases in their cycle. Tara?
So yes, it will, to a point, definitely. And, I'm sure you've had potential doctors on the podcast that may have talked and touched on phases of the cycle as well, where you should train, where you shouldn't train, where you can rest. And having said that, I'm going to not be completely black and white with it, is there are going to be some women that prefer to rest at certain points in their cycle and they feel that they need to. But then there's some women that feel absolutely great getting some movement and exercise in and walking at different parts in their cycle as well, where some might feel tired. So I think the most important thing is to go with what you feel. You know how your energy is day to day, and I think adapt your training to that, and don't be worried to adapt your training to certain weeks either, because if you need to scale back a little, do it. Adapt the weights in your training, adapt the volume that you're doing, change the exercise, switch the weights for a walk maybe if you need to. But however, if you've got the energy, then
it's
go with that feeling as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the most important thing in my experience, and I always want to say this to people, is actually knowledge, just knowing your own cycle. There's a lot of women who I think still don't track their cycle. They just kind of go with it and they don't realize potentially how important it is. So there might be a week where they feel like, oh gosh, why is this workout so tough? Why is this run so tough? Oh, I'm feeling demotivated, or I'm not progressing, I'm plateauing. When actually I think if they were tracking their cycle, they'd realize, oh, okay, that explains it. It's this specific week. It's not just a feeling of, oh, you know, we kind of, I think sometimes just roll our eyes and say, oh, you know, PMS, or, but it's really important. You know, so much going on physiologically during the different phases. So I would encourage anyone who's not tracking their cycle to start doing that first of all.
Absolutely. And I think especially touching on what you just said, you know, for yourself, for example, you're training for the marathon. Now, from someone that exercises just day to day to keep fit and healthy, to the demands of what marathon training or any kind of sporting training can have on you is huge, because your volume is going to change and no doubt you've got a plan of progression that you need to kind of stick to and follow. So yeah, tracking your cycle is really important. I think a lot of different sports watches and, you know, activity trackers can help you with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a game changer for me. I feel like I must tell everybody who will listen, even the men in my life. I'm like, track your cycle. Okay. And then the last one, strength training for both men and women increases testosterone. Now, caveat to this is that testosterone is essential. It plays an important role in the body for both men and women. It impacts sex drive, red blood cell production, and it helps our bodies to recover from training as well. So I think this is a two-part question. Number one, the first part is going to be, yeah, is this true? Strength training increases testosterone. And the second part of my question is going to be, is this a good thing? Is strength training what we need if we want to boost our sex lives? So who wants to kick it off? Greg?
Where do I go with this one? Okay, so first of all, I have to say I'm not a hormone expert.
Okay.
But if we look at, okay, do we want to boost testosterone or do we not want to? So if we look at what it is involved in, if it is going to give us more energy to exercise and train, and if it's going to make us stronger, then I think the way to look at it is, if we're going to do something, it's going to slightly boost that, then absolutely, why wouldn't we do that? I think where it can be difficult to get it right is, how much do we need to do when it comes down to exercise? And I think, you know, whether it's your first time at the gym or you've been training for 20 years, you know, the person that's been training for 20 years can still get this absolutely wrong. And that is because on a daily basis, the body is completely changing depending on what we've done that week, our stress levels, our sleep, all these different factors. So it's, yeah, I guess it's just understanding where you are on that day, and then if you're not feeling particularly great, then you've got to bring that training volume down, do a little bit less. And if you're completely new to it, it's starting super, you know, super light, super slow, and making sure that you have an exercise professional by your side that, you know, knows what they're doing.
Luckily I have both of you. But yeah, I think this is something that I've seen with friends and family members who, you know, again, I keep going on about the fact that this time of year things are just being almost rammed down people's throats about, you know, exercise and movement and nutrition and health, and it feels like everybody wants to start, you know, let's start something new. But actually, I think strength training, if it's something you've never done before for whatever reason, you might, yeah, feel intimidated by it. You might feel like you don't know what you're doing. But I think when it comes to this, you know, energy management, whether it's testosterone or not, whatever it is, there's definitely something anyway about strength training. I've seen it with so many, specifically female friends. It's a game changer, you know, from their energy. So they say, you know, I feel so much more energized. They feel physically stronger. Their posture is better. They almost stand taller and prouder and just, yeah, more energized, more powerful. So I'm all for that. Tyra, do you want to add anything?
I do. I think, you know, if you look at it as a topic on the whole, first off, if you're suffering from really low energy and any other symptoms, like, please go see a doctor, get a blood test done, go down that medical route. But also when you look at, you touched on things like sex drive and in general, like libido, if you call it, it won't just come down to kind of strength training. You're looking at what you're eating day to day. What is your energy intake? Are you eating enough calories? If you're not, then your energy is going to be very low. What is your diet compromised of? Are you getting enough good fats in your diet? Because that's really important for the health of our sex hormones at the same time. So it's looking at the kind of wider picture of everything. Which kind of will add to how you feel day to day.
Yeah, again, complex. Not just like tick that box, get them doing some weights and boost the sex drive. And also I think it's about, you know, this obviously what is normal, but I think ultimately as well, it's about change, isn't it? It's like if you had something before and then it feels different, that's when I think people are like, oh, okay, I maybe want to make a change. But save that for another podcast. Maybe I'll get a sexpert on, because I definitely feel like there's a lot of people who, I don't know why, but they want to learn more about it from a medical and a health perspective, but they just maybe don't know where to start, or maybe they feel embarrassed about the topic. So yeah, stay tuned for that. All right, so next up, I'd like to talk about, I guess, the category of functional fitness training. And I think functional fitness, as Greg, you'll probably explain to us, is not necessarily the same as CrossFit, which is, I suppose, they've made functional fitness into a sport. I think they've done a great job of creating a community and getting people active, which of course is great. So if people have discovered functional fitness in the last few years, if they've started a new routine, if they're part of a community that they love, then that is of course fantastic. But I want to know, I suppose, what are your thoughts on functional fitness as a sport? You know, we've seen the rise of things like HYROX. If you're familiar with that, the HYROX events, we're seeing a lot of people posting kind of challenges and personal bests, and yeah, really kind of encouraging people to take fitness and compete with others, which kind of seems quite contradictory to most things that are personalized in fitness. So Greg, thoughts on functional fitness as a sport?
So I think this really comes down to the individual. And if, you know, if you're a CrossFitter, for example, and you absolutely love going to CrossFit, you love the community, you love the people there, you love the exercises, and it feels great, and you feel like your health is being boosted by that, then, you know, absolutely crack on and carry on. I think that's amazing. But, you know, if you kind of join something, it doesn't have to be a CrossFit box, it could be anything, and you're looking, you know, you're competing against other people, and you know, if you're not doing so well, and it's not, you know, you're not feeling good by doing it, then, you know, there are other ways of getting stronger or fitter, and that could be the individualized approach. So yeah, ultimately I guess it's, you know, is it serving you, you know?
And the other, often joke, don't they, about injuries. I always hear people saying, I'll go to CrossFit, you'll go for 10 weeks and you'll get a back injury for free. And like people joke about it, because they're just like, you go in, you go hard. And it's kind of, yeah, this kind of almost like bro culture as well. I think people have, I mean, to be honest, if people are listening who love CrossFit, then I did an episode at the start of last year with Matt Fraser. Do you know who Matt Fraser is?
Yes.
Yeah. So he won the CrossFit Games 5 years in a row. I mean, like literally the GOAT. So, and he was amazing as well. Really humble guy. Really motivational, just a wonderful, warm guy. And you could kind of think, wow, of course people want to be in a community of people like that. So that was awesome. But I just think I've heard, yeah, a lot of people, sadly, who say, oh, I love CrossFit, but I can't go anymore because I broke my back. Okay. You know, it's like there's a lot of injuries coming out. So I'm thinking, well, why?
Okay. So I think, yeah, so now we're looking at a little bit that we touched on at the start. We've got exercise and then we've got sport. So two different things. So CrossFit is going to be classed, well, it is a sport itself. So if we just do CrossFit, for example, it, you know, there's a high risk of getting injured. And, you know, if we just play football, if we just run, if we do all this sport stuff, the risk of injury gets higher. So if we can do our strength training, our specific strength training, then that's going to make us stronger to be able to tolerate the sport so much more. And that's what makes it really enjoyable then. So then you can push yourself to, you know, limits you've never pushed yourself to before, because you have the strength to do that. So that makes just the whole process more enjoyable, rather than, like you said, you know, you do something for 10 weeks or whatever it may be, and then all of a sudden you've got a back problem, a knee problem, an ankle problem, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. So well, yeah. All those things you just listed, well, most of them, ankle, knee, hip, brings me on very nicely, thank you very much, to my question for runners, because there are a lot of runners who listen to this podcast, and especially now I think people training for the marathon or for half marathons for spring races, and my, I guess my fear for a lot of people is they've got so much enthusiasm at the start and they train hard out on the road, and then of course a few weeks before the big day they get injured and they end up going to see somebody and saying, can I still do this race that I've trained so hard for? I've been there myself, so I'm speaking from experience. So Tara, I'm going to come to you with this one. It's taken me many years, too many years, as a runner to realise and recognise the importance of strength training and the benefits of it for my road running. Because I'll be honest, there's only so many hours in a day. And of course, if you're busy and you've got work and you've got kids and you've got a certain amount of hours in a week that you can train, my initial thinking used to just be, well, that time needs to be spent running. It needs to be spent on the road. It needs to be spent putting in the miles. Even the low impact stuff like go on the rower or go on the, you know, bike. I used to think, well, if I've got an hour, I want to spend it running. So why do runners need to listen and learn and take heed and actually carve out space and time for strength training in their plan?
It's so important because, you know, we've worked with clients that have done marathons, and often they come to us because of a injury or pain they need to resolve to help get them through training and get them to finish line. And really, it would be great if they could start their strength training journey a lot sooner so they could prevent that from happening and be able to cope with the demands of all their marathon training. Now, having said that, it really comes down to the strength training that you're doing has to be very specific to your body as well. So in our instance, when we've got clients come in, Greg does the assessment. So he'll test your joints for weaknesses and strengths so we can see what do we need to strengthen specifically to help get you to where you need to be. And that's going to change person to person, but it's also going to change session to session, depending on what training you've done that week, how long your runs have been, what else you've done, what other activity you've done. But having that knowledge will hopefully help you be stronger in your runs, feel stronger in your runs, and go faster in your runs as well. And that's the aim, to get you to the finish line without pain and feeling as good as possible.
Yeah, or even to get you to the start line.
Get you to the start line, yeah.
Yeah, or even to get you to the start line, because for a lot of people, they might train for the marathon for 3 or 4 months and they just increase the volume over time. And as I said, speaking from experience, because I did that, the second marathon I was training for was exactly classic textbook overtraining, just too much running on my feet on the road, and I ended up injured. And I think, yeah, that is my message to anyone listening who is running and who is training. I want you to get to that start line feeling good, feeling strong, and feeling pain free. So definitely dive into a lot of the work that and a lot of the knowledge that Tara and Greg both share online, and I'll be sharing a lot of it actually throughout my training as well.
So just to touch on that as well, I just want to kind of, you know, ask the question, how many runners out there that are training for something, when they're following a program, whether it be, you know, 12 weeks or 6 months, whatever it may be, along that journey, at what point, because you're following your program, everything's great, you're getting your runs in, so from a mental standpoint everything's feeling great, but then at some point when you're running and you're on that run, oh, what is that in my knee? Ah, there's a little, just something, you know, I'll just keep on running, you know, I'll just run it off, it'll be fine. Or what's that in my back or my hip or whatever it may be? And, you know, then it might go away. Okay, so essentially we've been giving like this little warning, this little signal from our body saying, hey, I'm not comfortable right now. I'm not completely stable. You need to kind of just slow down and give me a chance to recover here. But we're following a plan. Right. So we can't do that. We've got to, you know, if we're going to get to that start line, we've got to follow that plan. So I think it's being really sensitive for every single runner that is training for something, being really sensitive to your body when you're on those runs, on the training runs. If something doesn't feel good, stop.
But how do you find that balance between doesn't feel good and stop? Because I'll be honest with you, if I stopped every time it didn't feel good, I would never finish my run. Because let's be honest, if I'm doing like a, you know, 16 miles, for example, it's cold and I probably feel good for the first 9 and then it might be okay. For me, hip flexors, oh, they're starting to feel tight. Legs are starting to feel heavy. Lower back, I sometimes start to feel like a tension. And it's kind of like, if I stopped then, I would never train up to the right distance. So how do you figure out like discomfort versus pain versus injury? This is a tough one.
So this is a great question as well. So now we're looking at your individual tolerance. What can your body tolerate? What can every muscle in your body that is making you run to produce movement, what can each of those muscles tolerate? So say you're getting to 8 miles and all of a sudden your hip flexors start kicking off and, you know, they start feeling tight and not very nice. They've reached their limit. Now the body is incredibly good at compensating. So it can move in all these different ways. It has multiple muscles that move the joint in a specific way. So when we're running, the body's always got all these options. But you think by 6, 7, 8, what's happened? The body's starting to run out of options to move. So if specific muscles aren't strong enough and we've gone through all these muscles and all these muscle fibers, and they've run out of strength, it's going to start sending pain signals back to the brain. So at that point, I would personally recommend try to slow down or walk, and then go, okay, what's my recovery like? Because, and you can note that down, right? Mile 8, hip flexors felt tight. And then you've got that in your notes. So you know next time you go for a run, what happens at mile 8? You know, same thing happen?
Should this increase over, this is fascinating and people are going to love this. Should this, then increase over time? So then it's mile 9 before it starts on mile 10. Or if it's every single time you just hit, maybe some people it's 60 minutes, some people it's 90 minutes. And that's when things start to kick off, flare up. And you just kind of, for a lot of people, they're like, that's when I have to just grip my teeth and turn my music up. And I know that's not what you want to hear.
No. So it's kind of going, right, what is the goal? The goal is you want to complete the race that you're training for. So it's always keeping that there. So if you push too hard in your training too soon, then you might not be able to even compete in the event or do the race. So, and the other thing that we talked about around strength training is that, yes, our muscles will get a little bit stronger by running very specifically. But if we want to get there more effectively and certainly more efficiently, then the work that we can do in the gym with strength training can get our muscles so much stronger for running than just running. So I'm not saying do one or the other. I'm saying, both are going to benefit you when it comes down to doing that race. So just to reiterate that, when you feel those little niggles, those tightness things, note that down. Where do you feel that, on the run? And like you were saying before, do you feel that on mile, if it was mile 8, and then you feel it on mile 6, next time you go for the run, you're like, okay, things are going in the wrong direction.
Okay,
so I need to recover more. Okay, yeah. So I need to give more rest, or I need to get some muscles stronger in the gym.
Yes, warning signs. And also, I think adding next to those notes is sleep. Because as we all know, I talk about it so much on this podcast about sleep. And actually, if you track how many, or not, you don't have to track with, a watch or a thing, but if you literally, when you've had a lot of sleep or a little bit of sleep, if you note down the weeks when you've not had a lot of sleep, I guarantee you're going to feel those pains a lot sooner and you're going to take a lot longer to recover. Whereas the nights or the weeks when I've been, boring, tucked up in bed by 9:30, the weekend long runs, you just feel like amazing, like you're invincible. You're like, oh, this is great. I'm not breaking a sweat. And it's literally because your body is so rested. So sleep to win, runners, and work on the strength.
Yeah, we're team 9 p.m. bedtime as well. So,
well, you have to be. We haven't even got into, we could do a whole separate episode on the kind of the business side, I think, from both of you, building a business within the fitness industry. Obviously, I know you have very early clients, so we're going to talk about the power hour in a minute. But I think just the work ethic, and I always say it to you both, I'm just forever impressed and in awe of the incredible, starting a business is one thing, but the amount of hard work, what it really, really takes, we could do a whole nother episode probably just on the business side. And yes, of course, gym owners, you are early risers, so very early to bed. So let's talk about the power hour. So before we dive into your power hour, both of you, I would, again, on the theme of strength, I'd love to know, for people who want to strength train, increase their strength training, is it good to do strength training first thing in the morning? And if so, one of the biggest questions that comes up again and again and again is, should I have breakfast first? Is fasted training okay? So specifically with strength training, should we be eating first? Is it good to strength train in the morning? Tara.
Okay, so, my God, you're going to hate me because, again, it's not black and white, but it will come down to your own individual preference and your energy in the morning, and also when you feel hungry. There are some people that don't really want to eat too much before they're trained because it affects their digestion. They're not that hungry. They just don't fancy it. Equally, then you've got people that wake up and they really need to eat. Greg's one of them. So, again, that's more looking at it from a hunger perspective. Then you have to look at the demands of the exercise that you're doing. If you're one of those people that wake up in the morning and don't feel hungry, but you've got a pretty, intense workout coming up, potentially you might need to have something. So that way you can have a look at something that's quick digesting. You can look at something like some toast with some jam on, or you get those little serene bars, which are malt loaf, which are going to give you some quick energy, low in fibre, so it's not going to upset your stomach too much, and then have your first meal later down the line.
Even though you're saying it's not black and white, I think it is actually good hearing that, because I've definitely heard this binary, either you have to, you can never train without, you know, fuel in your belly, which I always think is quite funny, because if you've had dinner the night before, you're probably not really fasted. But there's also the other camp of people that say fasted training is everything and you get all these additional benefits of all these things. So I think it's actually quite refreshing to hear someone say, actually, it's not you have to or you don't have to.
Yeah, precisely. It will literally come down to your workout intensity, your own personal goals as well. Like, you know, for someone that's looking to build a bit of muscle, your calorie demands might be greater. And if you skip a meal in the morning, does that mean that your energy intake will be kind of compromised later in the day? Then it might be important for you to get a meal in first. To those that, you know, aren't that hungry in the morning and can do their workout, we say fasted, but like we all know, you've eaten the night before as well. So yeah,
so you can figure out what you like and what works for you. And you've always encouraged me, Tahria, when we've talked about this, to just be considered that life happens as well, because I'm sure for many of your clients, you know, they're not necessarily coming in with this perfect optimized sleep and nutrition and thing, because they've got a life, they've got kids, they've got a job, they might like to have a few beers, and so you might come in and go, actually, I'm a bit knackered and a bit hungover. And I think that's also important to not, you know me, I advocate for self-discipline and motivation, and that doesn't mean that we have to negate the fact that life happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, touch on that. When our clients come in to the gym, and like you were saying, it's so different kind of session by session, week on week, of how our clients feel. So, you know, if we're following, you know, if we've designed a program and then we've got them on that program, and they're coming in, we've got to, you know, evaluate, not even session by session, minute by minute, how they're feeling, how are they training, you know, are they strong today, are they not feeling so strong today, and then we need to be able to adapt, you know, right there and then, to make sure that we're kind of, you know, stimulating them not too much, just about enough, that's going to leave them feeling energized at the end of the session, rather than, you know, kind of feeling, you know, a little bit beaten up, or, you know, oh, I didn't feel as strong today. And then the impact that that has on your mental health for the rest of the day, you know, especially if you're training in the morning. So,
or if you're someone like me who needs that gold star.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, no, I think it's good to consider, even if you're not training with someone like yourself, if you're training yourself by yourself, you know, I think what you just said is really important, because sometimes it can almost put you off if you're always training hard, if you're always feeling, you know, exhausted and battered by the end, then yeah, if you have had a poor night's sleep, or you've, you know, been out with friends and had too much wine, then you're probably going to be put off, as opposed to saying, well, actually, I'm just going to do a different session today, I'm still going to move, I'm still going to do it, but just modify it a little bit, give myself some grace, and life happens, instead of thinking, oh my gosh, there's no way I can do my session and end up being sick in the gym.
Right. Yeah, exactly that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
All right, okay. And so I would love to hear about your power hour, because as I said, you are both early risers and you probably have been for such a long time. So typically, what does your first hour of your day include, and what time does your day start?
To be honest, our mornings run pretty much like clockwork. I'd love to say that I get up and journal and meditate and all these things, but I really don't. Our alarm goes off. Greg is first out of bed. He's making breakfast because he needs it. Following on from what we just talked about, I don't get hungry till later, so I take my time getting ready, and then we both head into work.
What time? What time does the alarm go off?
5:15 it goes off. But we're actually opposites. So I'm more of a morning person, and Tara is definitely more of a evening person. So Tara's brain kind of switches on about 9 p.m., you know, and I'm fully alert by like 6 a.m.
So there is one ritual that we do every morning, and that's our morning coffee as soon as we get into work. We've got a great coffee machine that our clients kindly gifted us. So we sit, have a coffee, talk about the day ahead, and then see our morning clients, which start about... the gym's open from 6:30, but from about 7 a.m.
And that's Monday through Friday?
Yes.
Yeah, so weekends now, because obviously I know that you get up, 5:15 every day, and it's so different because I feel like for me to get up at that time is voluntary because, you know, I can get up and do my thing. But I know that for both of you, it's not, because as you said, you've got to get to the gym, you've got morning clients, so you have got to be consistent and you've got to show up at that time for those people. And I think it's quite similar to radio presenters that I've had on the show who do early breakfast, and they say, well, yeah, I've got to be in the studio at 5 a.m. or whatever it is. So there's no negotiating with it. So does that impact your evening, your night? Does that impact the night before? Are you both, you're both quite strict about going to bed, right?
Super strict. And I think, you know, we always want to be on our best game when it comes down to, you know, training our clients in the gym. Something that we do at Strength House is we're solving problems. Someone might come in with a, you know, an issue, an ache, a pain or whatever it is. So, you know, we kind of need that brain power to really figure this stuff out so we can actually, you know, give the service that we want to.
Yeah, like I said, you're a fitness scientist. I love it. So what happens at the weekend? I spoke to a sleep scientist on this podcast way back years ago, and she talked about people who get up early in the week and who sleep in at the weekend to try and recoup sleep and the pros and cons of doing that. So I'd love to know, do you still rise early at the weekends or do you stay in bed?
I think we try to, well, you can't catch up on sleep, but we definitely try to make the most of it at the weekend. So no, we're not getting up at 5:15 at the weekend, definitely not. I think from setting up our business, we were working a lot of the weekends as well, and as anyone that runs their own businesses or is a freelance knows that sometimes it's hard to switch off from work. So I think now, especially now, we're trying to prioritize recovery and rest as much as possible at the weekends. And also, can I say, we're in a position where we don't have children yet. I know it's very hard for people that do have children because their mornings start a lot earlier.
So do you remember when this was, I don't know, what, 5 or 6 years ago, when I'd read a certain sleep book, you know, and I'm very much like, I read something, I want to try to put it into practice.
Was it Matthew Walker, Why We Sleep?
No, it wasn't.
Do you remember the title of the book?
I think it was just called Sleep.
Oh.
You know, I absolutely loved the book. And what it was talking about was, you know, sleep cycles, and that we want to get into this rhythm. And so if you set a time that you get up every morning, so in our case, 5:15, you should try to do that 7 days a week, you know, 52 weeks a year. So wow. I was like, oh, okay, really inspired. Like, brilliant, I've got something new to try. This is going to change my life. So I did it, didn't I, Tara? Mm-hmm.
And how long?
I think I tried it for about 3 weeks. And at the end of the third week, I was so run down, I got sick. So it was just really interesting how sometimes we can kind of read something, get inspired and go, yeah, I'm going to do that. This is going to have a really positive impact. And actually, no, it has the total opposite effect. And what I really needed to do, because I'd worked so hard in the week and got up every morning, when it got to the weekend, I needed to not set my alarm and just let my body rest and recuperate.
Yeah.
So
not having these strict rules.
Exactly. Because, yeah, the body cannot. Yeah, if it needs to rest, it really needs to rest. So it's just checking in with yourself and going, okay, do I need to rest or do I really need to get up?
Yeah, I think routines are good, and there's a lot of benefit to routines, obviously, especially in building habits, but also just listen to your body and see how your week's been at the same time.
Yeah, I think one last question that I have for you both whilst you're here, I'm putting you on the spot now. I think just maybe a bit more of a personal one. As you mentioned then, you know, running your own business, you know, it can be all consuming for a lot of people. Whether it's a side hustle, whether they're entrepreneurs, whether they are just working really super hard at their current job role. And the fact that you're husband and wife. So you are essentially together, you're in it together, the business together, life together, everything together, which I'm sure has its challenges and also its joyfulness. But how do you try to approach and manage any kind of work-life balance, work-life blend, whatever you want to call it, so that you're not working all hours every day, 7 days, because I'm sure you probably could, right? I'm sure you could spend all weekend working on things for the business, talking about the business, thinking about the business, and probably sometimes you do. But do you have any, rules, things that you do to try and approach this? How do you, carve out space for your life and for your relationship that's nothing to do with the Strength House?
So, yeah. I mean, I guess one thing that we did when we opened Strength House was to go, right, weekends, we're not going to be open. And that may change in the future, but that's something that we wanted to start with, not just for ourselves, but also for our trainers as well, to make sure that they get enough rest. So, you know, we're a big advocate of do what you love doing, you know, try to find something, you know, when it comes down to work that you love, you know. So we want every one of our trainers to absolutely love what they do. So, yeah, if, you know, and same with us as well, if we're working 7 days a week, we're not gonna, you know, well, it's gonna be hard to love every single day. So taking that couple of days at the weekend is something that we try to carve out time for. And, you know, of course, running our own business, there are times where we have to do the admin side of things on the weekends and we've got no choice, and that's absolutely fine. But yeah, we do try to make the time on weekends, don't we, to do our own thing and separate that work life.
Yeah, I think it's important, like, you know, when to anyone running their own business, the line's going to be blurred, and it is hard to achieve that work-life balance. And I wouldn't say we're 100% there, but we're definitely making the efforts to do it. And there's some non-negotiables, like not opening at the weekends at the moment, like where we've, like, you know, personal trainers in general will know that sometimes you see clients on Saturdays, but that affects your week because you can't account for family time, friends, time with friends, social lives. And it's really important to have that balance in there so you don't get run down and burnt out.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who, as I say, especially if they're thinking, wow, they're husband and wife, so they work together and they live together and all the things together. And it can be a real challenge, I think, for people. They think, well, this is great. Ultimately, I get to work with my life partner and I get to build this amazing thing with them. But I think, yeah, that fear is that creep that it actually just takes over everything and you become business partners more than life partners. And yeah, I think for anyone, kids, no kids, it's just a constant challenge, isn't it? To kind of, if you love what you do and you're passionate about it, and ultimately, let's be honest as well, business has ups and downs and ebbs and flows, and sometimes it is, depending on the stage of the business, it might be that it's all hands on deck for a while, but knowing that actually later on maybe you have a different approach is important.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. It's exactly that. It's ebbs and flows, and you know, you've got to knuckle down when, you know, when the work's there, and then, you know, at some point you're going to have some respite at some point as well, so you enjoy that as well. But to be honest, on the, you know, because we love what we do, you know, on weekends we might end up going to, you know, different gyms and just like looking at different pieces of equipment, and because we just love doing that.
Yeah,
you know, so just addicted to training, really. No.
I know, like I said, the knowledge is, it's your passion for it comes across, and you've even made me like enjoy learning more about strength, so I'm really grateful for that. So before we finish up, because I know I could talk to you for a lot longer, can you tell us, I'm sure people are going to want to find out, well, firstly, where could they come and train with you just like I do, and then where can they access more of the knowledge and the content that you share online?
So our gym is in St. Paul's. It's about 2 minutes walk. It's by Mansion House and on Cannon Street. And you can find us on our website, www.strengthhouse.co.uk. And yeah, we've got a form there for any questions that you might have. And our Instagram is @strengthhouselondon.
And also one more thing, very exciting new project. Can you tell us about the app?
Yes, we have an app coming soon. It's a recipe and meal planning app. We really wanted to be able to help more people during and past lockdown as well. But because our work is so nuanced, we couldn't scale it the way we wanted to online digitally, because it's so personalised. However, we thought that maybe touching on food, because as we know, food has a huge impact on the way we think, the way we feel, the way we perform in our day-to-day work, family life, everything. So if we could help people build healthier behaviours through food, then that would be a positive change that we could help with. So yeah, that's coming soon, hopefully at the end of this year.
Well, it's very exciting and I cannot wait because I see all of your recipe creation. I've known you for a long time, and your recipes and your cooking and all the things that you, all the photos, it's always delicious. It's always great. So I will be using it myself as well. Thank you so much for joining, both of you, and thank you everyone for listening. As always, if you have enjoyed this episode, if you have learned something new, if you're feeling inspired, feeling motivated, don't waste it. Please share it, let us know, share it with others, anyone who you think might get value from listening to this episode. I really appreciate it, as it helps to grow the Power Hour community and to get more incredible guests like Tara and Greg. So have a great week, everyone. Thank you so much, Tara and Greg, and I'll be back next week with another episode.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
See ya.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.